Welcome to the Focus on Why podcast. I'm Amy Rowlandson and I ask my guests one simple question. Why? Focusing on the importance of why, I share with you the relatable, uplifting and inspiring conversations I have with people from all walks of life. This podcast will encourage you to focus on your why to enable and empower you to achieve the success you desire. Have a purpose, have a plan, focus on why. Before we start, I would like to draw your attention to my weekly email newsletter, Friday Focus. Each Friday, I focus on one topic with one action arising. The link to sign up is in the show notes, or head over to amyrowlandson.com and sign up right now. Today on Focus on Why, I am joined by Liz Cashin. Liz, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
And my audience can't see, but you are wearing my favourite electric blue. My goodness, it's a gorgeous colour. You look amazing.
Oh, I love this colour. My TEDx, I was in this colour. It's sort of become my brand colour when I speak, I think.
Yeah, ditto. I love that colour too. So let's not talk about colours, or we can if that's what you want to focus on. It's completely up to you. But what is it you're focusing on?
I want to focus on, I think, my story of why throughout my life. Because why, asking why, and focusing on why actually has had a huge impact on the trajectory of my life at different times and for different reasons.
So I thought I'd explore. Where are we going to start? Yeah, where are we going to start with this trajectory that you've been on?
I think I don't want to go into the past too much, but I had a very sort of traumatic childhood, and I felt responsible for a traumatic event that happened, and a friend of mine died, and I didn't get any help at all to process it. So in my 20s, I kind of went off the rails a bit. Unsurprisingly, looking back, you know, I had undiagnosed PTSD, and that led to sort of, you know, risky behaviours and different things that I was acting out. And then I think I got to a rock bottom in my life in my later 20s. And I just really remember asking, you know, it's like a sort of, at that point, I was really, didn't believe in religion. I'd been, not that I'm anti-religion, if anybody's religious, I'm very inclusive, that's all good. But for me, I hadn't had a good experience. And actually, I thought there was a punishing God. And because of what happened, that I was going to hell. So I had a very negative view, if you like. But I remember at this rock bottom and sort of crying out to whatever might be there of a higher intelligence, and just saying, why did this happen to my friend? Why did this happen to me? Why did it happen to her family? Just why was this allowed to happen? Like, why was this? And it was such a deep why within me. And I think, looking back, that asking that really set me in motion for trying to find some answers. So I didn't know that that's what was going to happen at the time, but that is definitely then what happened, is I started to be shown different things. I think it was like a step-by-step process, and it really led me to, you know, what's the purpose of life? You know, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? Why am I here? It was that deep a process that was set in motion at that time. And I'm really grateful for that, because I think without that, I'm not quite sure I'd still be here, if I'm honest. But it set me on a different path, and looking for the answers to those really big life questions. A few years later after that, I went off traveling. Ended up on a beach in South Goa, and a Dutch girl said to me, oh, can I give you some Reiki? And I said, what's that? And she said, you know what, it might sound a bit strange, but why don't you give it a go, and then I'll tell you about it afterwards. And so I lay down on this wooden shack on the beach. I mean, beautiful, it was, you know, picture perfect setting. And she gave me this session of Reiki, which I found out afterwards was a form of energy healing, which, to be honest, at that time, I was so shut off my life was, you know, it'd been in that crisis for a while, and it was quite a profound experience. So I experienced a connection to something much greater than me. Well, just the fact that I had a connection to something was transformative, but I felt like I was a part of it, and it really set me on this path to exploring what that means for me. And it really, yeah, it was another huge sort of turning point in my life. But I think asking those why questions in my late 20s and then early 30s, going traveling, opening up to these new experiences, it was like I was starting to get possible answers to my questions and experiences that my mind couldn't, I couldn't have made that up. You know, it was something that, to me, it was so pure, because I knew nothing about energy healing or anything like that. And suddenly I was having this really transformative experience that set me in motion on another path.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing there is that this moment or this profound experience that you had, where you felt that connection, where you felt a part of something greater than you, and that you just felt a part of it. What do you think it is?
Oh, we're starting small here. So for me, and this is just my current view, it evolves, but I think it was pretty similar in essence back then, is it really is everything. So I feel connected to everything. So everyone, everything, the planet, the galaxy, the universe. But I feel, before that, I felt so separate, so disconnected from everything and everyone. And so suddenly there was a connection, and it wasn't, I'd found with religion, it was sort of external. There was a God outside somewhere, but this connection I had was inside. It was like in my heart. And that connection has not gone. So it's something that's stayed with me. And as I say, I've explored more, but the it is everything.
Yeah, I love that. This experience that you had, and obviously you wouldn't wish it on anybody, it acted as a catalyst for you. And you said that it was undiagnosed PTSD. I mean, in those days, it wasn't even a thing. It didn't exist, did it? That title. Well, I don't think it did anyway.
No,
obviously existed as a something that people experience, my goodness, of course, but not as a label that we were able to define, to work on, to understand that's something that's happened as a result of trauma.
Yeah. Didn't even know trauma back then. In fact, my GP when I was 13 said it didn't even need to go on my medical record because it wasn't that serious. That's how differently we saw these things back then.
Wow.
So, yeah.
The questions you asked with why, and you said your story of why throughout life. Why for me in the context of this conversation is purpose. It's at the heart of what it is that is driving you to live a life that's full of fulfillment. Those why questions of why did this happen to me, my friend, my family? Do you ever ask those questions still, not specifically related to that, but do you ever ask the why question in that perspective? Is it why me?
That's an interesting question. I think I've come to a place after much processing and healing around the whole thing that it happened to me because it did. And that, so it was meant to happen because it did, in that sense. Mm-hmm. I do personally have a sort of deeper spiritual belief around it, that there is a much bigger picture to life than one that we can see. And that things that don't make sense, because there is no sense to what happened, you know, on that level, it's, you can't make any sense of it, of a trauma like that. But actually, for me, it's given me great comfort to think in a bigger picture that everything sort of fits together, that there is a bigger picture to life. And I might not know what that bigger picture is, but in trusting that there is one, it gives me a great sense of comfort and, like you say, a deeper meaning to life. And also, when I started to explore this concept, and I did it a lot when I was traveling, was around the deeper meaning of the why that it had happened. And I thought, I may not understand in that bigger picture of life, but in trusting that there is this deeper meaning, then what meaning can I give to it? So on a personal level, how can I give some purpose to this? So that was something that then drove me. So it they call it post-traumatic growth is actually a thing. And often people who've been through very serious traumas catapults us, because I couldn't live with the level of pain that I was in. So, you know, there were a few options for me, and one of them, I think, would have been exit stage left, because it was just too much. And so it was almost like that pain drove me to finding more and more answers and finding different perspectives and different ways of looking at things. Although in essence the same, I'm also a very different person than I was before this happened to me. I'd like to think I'm a much more compassionate person, because I think when you go through something like that, it does help you not to be so judgmental towards other people. So I started to think, okay, what can I do? So I couldn't control what happened to me, but what I can control is what I do with what I'm learning. And so that led me to retraining as a life coach, started to work with people, helping them to find their purpose. Interestingly enough, about 20 years ago, that was how I started out. I loved that work. I found that, you know, that was very connecting as well. And then it just became this sort of self-propelling motion to deepen my sense of purpose. And I found I really wanted to help people. I think that was a driving force. But then it sort of became clearer at each iteration what that actually means to me. And the way I realized that was how I felt about it, is whether I felt aligned with it or not. And so it did become sharing my story, you know, professional speaker, wrote a book around my story. And so that became my purpose for a while, in just sharing the lessons that I'd learned. And then mental health in organizations, mental well-being, that really was driving me. But I felt like that was almost like a part of my healing journey and not my fully aligned purpose. And although that is all part of the greater purpose, but I really feel the work that I do with women, empowering women, I feel like I can feel so aligned, I'm passionate, I get lots of energy, and that's really, you know, the work that I absolutely love that I'm currently doing.
There's a phrase that Brené Brown has, which is inextricably connected. Mm. And it really fits what I feel you're describing here, in that it's impossible to disentangle or separate all the pieces that come together and or explain, you know, why they've come together or how they've come together, but they just have. And that links into another one of my favorite people, and the book is Loving What Is, which is about reality. It's Byron Katie's. You can't argue with reality. It's happened. It is what has been and is. And it's, you talked about what you can control and focusing on that, and then the development of the story that you've shared just then, in terms of the layers of the speaking skills, the writing skills, the sharing of what happened with you in organizations with mental well-being, now empowering women and the energy and alignment. And you say it is for you, it's brilliant. And what is it that you want specifically to empower women to do or be?
I'm passionate. I think we've all got this leadership potential. Some of us are more along that journey than others, but I think so many women are holding themselves back from that. And a huge part of that is because of our self-worth. And that is driven by a number of factors. And I know from my own childhood, even around that traumatic event, I had other things that really influenced my sense of self in a very negative way when I was a child. And so my passion is helping to raise awareness so other women can understand their own self-worth journey. And overcoming imposter syndrome is, you know, one of those talks that I give around that. But it's almost like women are waking up to, oh, gosh, actually, so many of us are feeling this way. I thought it was just me. You thought it was just you. You thought it was just you. And it's almost like giving ourselves permission to say, oh, gosh, God, OK, so this is something we've all been feeling like a fraud. Why is that? You know, what are some of these underlying reasons? Some of it is our personal journeys. Some of it is the media, social media. It was our role models growing up. You know, I had Margaret Thatcher as a female role model, but all the CEOs were men. Most TV presenters were men. Most radio presenters were men. You know, all of this was unconsciously giving me an internal glass ceiling that that I've had to really go inside and explore how I've created that for myself so I could break through. And now just really want other women to do the same. I think we need to get gender parity in leadership. I think this planet has been ruled by men for thousands of years. And, you know, I think we need a more balanced feminine perspective around things so that there's more collaboration, there's more unity, there's more of a softness. You know, we see all the wars. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely heartbreaking what's happening around the world. And all those leaders are men, you know, and so my passion really is to drive a world of more equity where women have a greater role on many levels.
And we're women of a certain age, Liz, and I'm just wondering, are the children, are the young generation right now growing up with the same levels of imposter syndrome and lack of self-worth as we did?
Still. I mean, do you know, I'm so grateful I didn't have social media when I was growing up. I think it's just added such a level of complexity for young people and how they're comparing themselves to others. You know, the picture's got to be perfect on social media. You've got to look a certain way. It's all about your image, you know, which isn't the real you. So, you know, of course, imposter syndrome is rife still in different ways, potentially, that I created it. And, you know, my generation growing up. But I think it's definitely still there. And in fact, maybe stronger in some ways because there is all this pressure, you know, the size zero models that we had, all that phase and airbrushing on folk. You know, we didn't have all of that when I was growing up. And there weren't as many women in the spotlight. So in that sense, there also wasn't those women to compare myself to, which can bring out its strengths and drawbacks. But I think now for young people, it's everywhere. And, you know, Botox when they're still a teenager, or, you know, body augmentations, all of that is really, I'm not okay as I am. And that's really at the heart of low self-worth. I'm not good enough as I am. And I think we see that everywhere for young people. I mean, where are the role models for them that it's okay for you to be okay as you are, it's to accept yourself, to have flaws, to make mistakes? You know, there's this perfectionist ideal that's everywhere, and it's impossible to achieve. And yet so many people are striving for it. It's there's a great book by Gabor Mate, The Myth of Normal. And he says this normal that we've all sort of bought into, that so many people are striving for, actually is based on such unhealthy conditions and perfectionist tendencies that actually we can't have really good mental health in those environments, in those conditions. Like, we're setting up that normal we've set up is actually very abnormal if we're thinking about being healthy and loving and accepting of ourselves. And I think that's really what's missing at the moment.
So with that perspective of somebody really ought to do something, what is it that you're doing right now?
Me personally or the work that I'm doing?
Yeah, both. What is it? Yeah.
So me personally, I mean, from who I was back then, you know, I used to, my diet was horrendous. I used to go out and take a lot of drugs. I was in very risky relationships. I'd sabotage any success that I had. You know, it was a very difficult existence on many levels. And my inner talk, if people know what that is, but we have this, you know, inner voice or inner voices, actually. And mine was just, you know, shouting abuse at me the whole day long. It was very, very difficult. And that was part of the PTSD as well. So now I've really started, I practice mindfulness, which has been really key. I'm now a mindfulness practitioner as part of some of the things that I do, because it's helped me so much to become aware of what's actually going on and actually what's true and what's not true. And so many of the things that I created about myself were untrue, but I was holding them to be true. You know, I thought I was a really bad person. I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought I deserved to be punished. And I was living out those beliefs. So now what I've been doing is this inner work, this inner process, and discovering those beliefs and changing them into more empowering ones. You know, I was just an innocent child back then. I was doing what the adults in my life told me to do. You know, there's no bad part of me that created that. So that's the journey that I've been on, is just really exploring what is going on, what was going on inside of me, and where it really was destructive, was really starting to change that. And my voice inside now is much more nurturing and kind. So I consciously practice kindness towards myself through kind thoughts, kind actions. I'm healthy, you know, I exercise, I've got nurturing relationships. So it is literally from one end of the spectrum to the other. And it's been a process through that. But I'm also now just started a master's in applied positive psychology in organizations and leadership. I love learning. Like, the more I learn about myself, about how, you know, how we create things, how our mind works, and actually how we can learn to thrive. And that's what this master's is all about. How can individuals, teams, and organizations thrive? And I'm absolutely loving it. So really want to bring that in more to how can women in leadership thrive? How can they, you know, bring that into organizations? So my whole life now is constructed around my purpose, I think. That's how I've created it. And it's been a journey, an ongoing journey. I don't think there's ever I'm not expecting to get to a point and go, oh, that's it. You know, here we are, enlightenment or whatever. Certainly not in this lifetime, I don't think. But yeah, I just keep following those places of alignment within me, those threads of alignment where I feel aligned, where I feel, when I feel like I'm on purpose, I just feel expanded. I feel just totally, like we're talking about connection, but it feels like the right thing to me.
And it is difficult to describe that emotion. I was thinking about it on my walk today, of what purpose actually feels like. You know, if you had to describe what it is to be living with purpose, and because there are so many different elements to it, you just explained that it feels like you're expanded. How else could you describe that expanded feeling?
It feels joyful, expansive, joyful, free, purposeful. driven.
Yeah. And it's going to be different for everyone, right? This is the thing. But purpose is an emotion. For me, it's about authentic connection. It's about true belonging. And if I have to describe it as a feeling, it's when I get goosebumps. Mm. When I get goosebumps is my measure of that's really tapped into my core. And I can't explain, because it happens. You can't actually necessarily make yourself get goosebumps. It's just, it will come. And that's how I know that I'm doing something. I've just given myself goosebumps now, just thinking about because it is about that deep connection, knowing that what you're doing is of value, is of importance to you, to the people that you bring your work towards, and also how you're creating the pathways for others to tread with more purpose, to understand how particularly what you're doing, the empowerment is going to unlock so much. And you said about holding themselves back, and it will allow them to open up, to be, I love that expression of waking up.
And
yes. And it's wonderful. It is wonderful to sort of wake up and know that it's a new day and you can absolutely go out there and encounter what it is that you want to do.
Love it. I'm feeling my expansiveness. Because, you know, I was in a prison of my own making for many years. And, you know, I just held myself back in so many ways, this underlying fear, unsurprisingly, as I say, with everything going on. But the liberation, you know, giving myself permission, not needing external validation, that's a huge shift as well that I would love for more women, is not needing to becoming your own inner cheerleader, your own inner validation, and really, you know, and really understanding that other people won't like you. You know, I was on this mission, I think, to make that if somebody didn't like me, I'd failed somehow. It's like, people don't like me. Some people really love me, and that's life, you know. But where am I going to focus? Where is it going to help me? And I used to focus on all the people who perhaps didn't like me and trying to win them over. And that's, oh gosh, that's futile, you know, because that's up to them and, you know, and their lives. So it was almost like a turning around in some ways. And then like, oh, actually, some people really want to hear what I've got to say. Some people, you know, really love it. They have transformations. You know, they find it really powerful. And they're the people, of course, that I want to spend my time around and share things that I've learned with, because actually they want to hear it, you know. And if somebody else doesn't, that's fine. They're on a different path and that's okay. Someone else, you know, other people will be perfect for them. And that's how life is. That's how it is.
I love the expression prison of your own making. And it really sort of sings to my heart, because I've literally just written a book about my grandfather who was a prisoner of war, and where you have the restrictions of an external prison, but you also have those layers of your own making with what's happening in your mind. Can you remember when you freed yourself from that prison of your own making?
I remember a pivotal point, and I'd gone traveling in India for a year, and long story short, the visa rules changed. And so I had to go to Sri Lanka to get my visa stamped. A week before, they changed the rules, which meant if you left India, you couldn't return for 2 months. So suddenly and unexpectedly, I was stuck in Sri Lanka and I couldn't get back to India. So I thought, okay. And by this point, I'd started to really trust in life. I made it a sort of experiment at first. Let me just see how this goes. And I was like, okay, life, if you've brought me here, show me, like, where am I supposed to go? And I'd already done a Vipassana meditation, 10 days in silence in India. And I was due to do another one back in India and I couldn't get back for it. So I thought, right, let me look for a meditation center. So I found one at the top of this tea plantation, absolutely idyllic, looking out across the hills in southern, south of Kandy in Sri Lanka. And I went to see I'm laughing because it was like, what was I, you know, some of the things I put myself through. I went to see the head of the center and I said, oh, some people have these in silence badges, which sounds a bit strange because it was a meditation center, but some people were in their own completely silent retreat. Other people were just in the sessions and then they could talk in the breaks and that sort of thing. He said, yeah, I think it'd be good for you to go into your own retreat. And I was thinking, oh, 10 days. And he sort of paused and he said, I think 3 weeks would be really good for you. 3 weeks. And at this point, remember, I hadn't dealt with any of my trauma. It was all here. And I just touched it in the Vipassana. I felt this rage inside me. So I really was putting myself through something really quite intense. But there I went into silence for 3 weeks on my own. And I literally went through every emotion you could possibly think, all the layers. I was dropping through like anger, rage, frustration, joy, peace. I mean, it was, and, you know, alternating. But I, at one point, I was really deeply going into the pain. And it was like, at that point, it was like, it felt never ending. It was, I was just going deeper and deeper and deeper. And I remember this point where I actually was sort of shouting, probably just in my head, but I was like, I can't take it anymore. I've suffered enough. It was like, I just really meant it at that point. I thought, I just don't know if I can carry on like this. It was just too much. So it was a real declaration. I've suffered enough. And it actually did feel like my heart sort of opened a bit. And there was a lot of tears. And I felt compassion for myself, I think, for the first time at that point. And I really felt like I needed to get to that point. It was like my breakthrough moment that I had to really declare to myself, like, I am not going to keep suffering like this. I've got to find a different way. So that was the moment.
I love that. And what's your environment now, Liz?
My environment now is nurturing. I have to say, I am a bit of a traveler, and that's something that I thought for a while, and I think it was true actually, but I think these two realities can coexist. I think I was running. I said to somebody at one point, a moving target is harder to hit. And I felt like with the trauma, I was just constantly moving, because then it was like no one could hurt me, no one could find me. But actually, what I've come to embrace is that part of me. In, I love exploring different places, different cultures, different places in the UK, different places overseas. I just love it. I always grow so much. And so the year before last, I spent 7 months in, no, 8 months in Bali. That was amazing. And so I was working remotely from there. So I'm in a really nurturing home environment, and I like to go off and have adventures and see where life takes me.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You spoke about the prison of your own making, and how that has shifted that environment, and now it's an expansive environment that you're in. It's totally the opposite to that prison that you described. And you spoke about the inner critic earlier, and I call it my inner champion, sometimes my inner coach, but mostly my inner champion. And that reframe really does make a difference in terms of how we filter, how we see not only external, but internal reflection as well. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Liz, thank you for sharing your long, not long story, but as in the the evolution in terms of how it has been. It, something for you has been an entire lifetime of challenging the purpose and the why behind what's happened and what's going to happen in the future. You're now more in control of that. Thank you. It really has been a privilege to hear your journey. How would people connect with you? What's the best way to do that?
I'm very fortunate. I've got an unusual name. So if you Google me, you'll find lots of ways. But I do have a website, Liz Cashin. It's liscashin.com. So you can find me there, or LinkedIn is another great place to connect.
Amazing. Thank you, Liz. Do you have some final words for the audience, please?
Oh, what's coming to me? I think if you're wondering what your purpose is, because I know it for me, it was like it was almost like it was painful for a few years. What's my purpose? So I would say relax into it and trust that you know it, and actually your heart knows the way.
How has this conversation had an impact on you? What value have you received from tuning in? What are your reflections with actions? Please take a moment to leave me an Apple Podcast or Spotify review sharing how Focus on Why has made a difference to you today. Remember, the conversation doesn't end here. To keep it going, simply connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, or join the Focus on Why Facebook group.
All the links are in the show notes. Have a purpose, have a plan, focus on why.